Welcome to the Medicinal Herbs Podcast from Holistic Matters. In this episode, naturopath and medical herbalist Amanda Williams joins our host, Sarah Labrum-Blaschka, to talk about a common issue in the United States and around the world, pain. Many botanicals serve as agents for pain management, often being categorized into inflammatory pain relievers, analgesics, and smooth muscle spasm relievers.
Well, we're back today with Amanda Williams, and we're going to talk about a really important topic to the nation and to the world, really, and pain. And we see pain is having an effect across many age groups and also, you know, really something difficult to control, which has led to many other issues. And so we're going to dive in and talk about some natural approaches to pain and really how much pain is affecting our nation. So Amanda, when we think about pain, and as we know, for many of our practitioners, pain is one of those common concerns that people are coming in for. So really, what is the size of that problem?
Well, thanks, Sarah. It is a big problem. So just to give you an idea in terms of official statistics, which what we would probably all argue as clinicians is too low, but the official statistics in a national survey published in 2019 of 32,000 American adults assessed chronic pain and high impact pain. So let's just clarify those. Chronic pain is pain that persists and lasts for three or more months. And high impact pain is pain that is chronic, but it debilitates you to the point that you have limited life and work activities. So of those 32,000 people that were surveyed, over 20% had chronic pain. And if we factor that up to the sort of approximate American adult population, that would be about 50 million Americans that would be, you know, some point in their life suffering chronic pain. And 8% of the people surveyed had chronic pain so bad that it was called high impact. Remember, that's where you're debilitated. You can't work, possibly you can't do your life activities, maybe you can't do your housework, clean, look after your children, and so on. So importantly, both these chronic pain and high impact pain were highest amongst adults 65 and over. Now, that's typically what we might see in our own patient base as well. I mean, obviously, if you're a chiropractor, you're seeing many ages with different types of pain all the time because that's your bread and butter. And women are more likely to have both types of pain, chronic pain and high impact pain, than men. Now, what I know from my clinical experience is that women tend to come to see you for whatever's bothering them at that time. So it might be hormonal issues, it might be digestive problems, but they often forget, even on the intake and in the consultations, to tell you about their pain, right? Because they've normalized it. Now, worldwide, back pain is the single leading cause of disability, and up to 80% of people will experience back pain in their lives, which is huge. Now, that back pain obviously could be acute, lasting just for a few days, or it could be chronic. And in the US alone, more than 15 million people have severe joint pain due to arthritis. Plus, of course, there's many other types of pain, whether it be dysmenorrhea, headaches, acute injuries, carpal tunnel syndrome, you know, there's a whole spectrum of different types of pain. And very often for many of us as clinicians, if we're not chiropractors, we're seeing people when they've been everywhere else for help. And there's still a lot that's not known about pain. And it's worth just mentioning quickly that the Nobel Prize for Physiology or Medicine in 2021 was awarded to two key researchers for their discoveries of receptors for temperature and touch, which, which were the TRPV1 and PAIZO2, right? Now, I know this is a lot, but the key thing about this is that that was just last year. There's still so much that we don't know about the mechanisms of pain, but what we do know is it helps, it sort of ends up being a whole spectrum of issues in a patient. So it's worth understanding that you don't necessarily need to understand all the biochemistry of the pain. You just need to know what tools can help.
Mm-hmm. I mean, pain is very complex, right?
And it's totally
right.
It's not just one thing, and it can be like secular, right? You know, one thing leads to another that leads to another thing, right? And then the pain continues. I know when we talked about sleep and we talked about pain and sleep and the lack of sleep and how pain can, you know, have a, you know, effect on that too. So it's a really intense kind of like process. So when we think about maybe kind of getting into it, can, you know, herbs and botanicals have an effect? And what are kind of those? And then maybe if we dive into like the different areas that they can support.
Certainly. So what we know from the research is that there's definite benefit from modern research to show that botanicals can really help. But there's also a long traditional use with many of these herbs as well, going back thousands of years. So we've got the empirical knowledge and the modern research. And what we do know is that they can help not just provide, say, analgesic support, but they can work on a multifaceted approach in the body. So, for example, many of our herbs are good for the nervous system as well as pain, as well as inflammation. So it's not unidirectional, so not one pill fits one purpose. And so that is a key benefit from them. And the key thing that we've got to understand is that feeling pain, we're feeling pain. It's a signal in the brain that is telling us we're in pain. So we've got to work on the nervous system. And we've also got to understand that the pain is a sign that the body is in distress or dis-ease. So it's not, oh, my wrist is sore. It's like, well, what else is actually going on in that person to signal to the brain that there's a problem with that wrist or that knee, for example, because we've typically got systemic inflammation. We might have, you know, insulin resistance, for example. So as you touched on before, there's many other things that can happen. But the botanicals, if you use them at the right, choosing the right ones, which we'll touch on a bit today, using the right dosages at the right time, you can really help that person. And don't just think it's only focusing on pain, because as you just said, sleep might be an issue. And we know from the research that sleep, if you have poor sleep health, it actually increases the perception of the severity of pain than pain affecting sleep. So if you can improve your sleep health, which we've talked about in another podcast, so go and have a look at that, you can actually minimize your perception of pain, so your awareness of pain. So to you, it will feel less. So that's just one example. So probably we should get into some of the key botanicals and the categories that we're looking at, yeah?
Yes. So I think as we think about kind of some of the botanicals, like the first area that I go to, right, is inflammation, right, when I think of pain. Right. That's kind of like what we've all been taught is inflammation is, you know, part of that complex.
Yes, it is, because it's your body's immediate response for protection. You know, so if you've had an injury or something is not right in the body, it triggers inflammation as a signal to you that your body's going into a defense mechanism to protect you. So the core sort of categories that we're looking at are inflammation and pain, then analgesic relief, and then we'll very briefly touch on sort of smooth muscle relaxants. So they're called spasmolytics, and also skeletal muscle relaxants as well. So the first section is inflammation and associated pain. So my favorite there is the highly bioavailable curcumin, which is a very specialized extract of turmeric. And I particularly favor the one combined with fenugreek galactomannosides, which I know is a bit of a mouthful, but essentially it's a soluble fiber from the teeny tiny fenugreek seeds combined with the curcuminoids, which are the lovely compounds in turmeric that give it its beautiful orange color. So you combine those together, and in that compound, when it's combined together, what can happen is it really helps the curcuminoids to go through the oral metabolism, go through the liver metabolism, and the majority of curcuminoids then come out unconjugated. What does that mean? Well, these free curcuminoids or unconjugated curcuminoids after liver metabolism can then really travel through the blood into various tissues in the body and even can cross the blood-brain barrier. And that's important because neuroinflammation is often associated with systemic inflammation. And remember that pain is typically a signal in the brain that's telling you that there's something wrong. So, and also neuroinflammation is important to address in things like mental health disorders, such as, you know, depression, anxiety, neurodegenerative disease, etc. So when you have this highly bioavailable curcumin, it has many, many benefits beyond pain and inflammation, which my colleague, Professor Kerry Bone, has talked about on another podcast on Holistic Matters. So antiviral, cytoprotective, it supports the Keep NRF2 pathway, which is really important for your own internal detoxification in the cells and healthy cells, etc., and much, much more. But in regards to pain, it is an amazing anti-inflammatory. And a recent study published in 2021, which was a systematic review, a meta-analysis of 15 RCTs, randomized controlled trials, of over 1,600 participants, showed that compared to NSAIDs, curcumin and turmeric have similar effects on joint pain, function and stiffness as measured by WOMAC. And I want to just mention WOMAC. If you're not using the WOMAC questionnaire in your office with patients who've got OA or other chronic degenerative pain that limits their daily functions, please download it off the internet and use it as a great questionnaire for managing your patients. I could talk much longer about that, but that's enough to say for the time being. So make sure you're using the questionnaire and getting the benefit from properly assessing your patients. So also turmeric has been shown to be really beneficial for exercise-induced muscle soreness and that delayed onset muscle soreness. So for example, if you've got patients that maybe are exercising a lot, you know, to they might be, you know, triathlons on the weekend, etc., get them taking their turmeric to help prevent that exercise-induced muscle soreness. But there are many, many benefits in terms of turmeric, and particularly the highly bioavailable turmeric, the curcuminoids with the galactomannosides, to help with any type of inflammatory condition, so your OA, RA, lupus, and also all of your cardiometabolic diseases, so type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, anything where there's inflammation, just think bioavailable curcumin with galactomannosides and you'll get some great results. The next herb I like to use is Boswellia. Now, this has been long, long known to help reduce inflammation. And I love to think about the plant itself. So it's a tree and we use the bark of the tree. And when that bark on the tree is damaged in some way, just naturally in its environment. It lives in a really harsh environment in North Africa, very dry and arid. And the resin in the Boswellia tree seeps out of the inner part of the tree to heal up that part of the bark that has been damaged or removed. So this is a great way to think about Boswellia in terms of understanding how it will really help in the body. It's been shown to be particularly beneficial to support base, you know, OA, so osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease. It is fantastic. So here you're thinking ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, and also there was a meta-analysis and systematic review done in 2020 of seven RCTs that showed Boswellia alone was effective in reducing the WOMAC indices of pain, stiffness, and improving joint function. So if you combine Boswellia with celery seed, for example, plus a turmeric and ginger, the celery seed will provide you with diuretic and depurative support. What does that mean? It will help to reduce edema and swelling. So it's fabulous for those patients that have got those big swollen knees, you know, they've got osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, even, you know, swollen joints. You can really get that down and also improve their joint function, reduce pain and stiffness. So Boswellia is well worth using. Now, Boswellia, because it's a resin, it's much better in a tablet than a liquid. So if you're using Boswellia liquid herbs, you're probably not going to get enough boswellic acids to have these effects. And it goes without saying, with all of these herbs we're talking about today, there's lots and lots of quality issues. So it's, you know, buying from a really credible supplier will make sure that you're getting what it says on the bottle and it, and to do the job it's meant to do. And another example of that is willow bark, because for, you know, when I went through herbal training and my naturopathic degree, willow bark was always a liquid extract and it never worked. You know, I used it a lot and it never, ever worked. And then some German research came out, I think in early 2000s, that showed a particular specialized, highly concentrated extract of one phytochemical in it called salicin really offered strong anti-inflammatory and analgesic properties. And they did some trials in very, very severe chronic pain for chronic pain centers in Germany as well with this particular extract. And there's been many other trials since then. And they've done trials in osteoarthritis and chronic low back pain. And I find it very, very useful for any spinal pain. So, you know, cervical pain, like cervical spondylosis, for example, lumbar pain, you know, sacral pain, anything where there's inflammation involved, it works very well. And what now is super interesting about willow bark, plus some other herbs I'll discuss in a moment, but there's a new concept that's being almost like the hot topic of the moment in the research on PubMed, and that's on a compound called HMGB1. So HMGB1 stands for High Mobility Group Box Protein 1. Which I know isn't something that just rolls off the tongue, but this is really important. So I'd like you just to think about HMGB1 being a big red flashing neon sign of saying inflammation, right? So it's a potent DAMP, which is a damage or danger associated molecular pattern. And what that means is that your body naturally produces this in response to your, it's sensing danger. You know, it might be an infection or it might be an injury. So your body produces DAMP, which then one of the DAMPs is this HMGB1. Now, there is an explosion on PubMed. Like, literally, I cannot keep up with it. There are so many papers. And the reason why is that they've recognized that HMGB1 is clinically increased in a whole raft of different inflammatory conditions, including chronic kidney disease, inflammatory bowel disease, any type of chronic inflammatory and autoimmune diseases, endometriosis, neuroinflammation, neurodegenerative diseases. And there's so many papers on PubMed. So if you're interested in this, have a look at it, because it's now really considered a key target, key clinical target to address any inflammatory conditions in the body. And so, of course, what's happening is they're looking to develop a drug for targeting HMGB1. And what there also is, thankfully, is there's research to show that we have herbal solutions for this. So we know that salicin from willow bark converts eventually in the body, so it's metabolized into salicylic acid. So please don't think that willow bark is like aspirin. It's not, and doesn't have any of the negative side effects of that. So salicylic acid, which is eventually converted from salicin in the body, actually blocks HMGB1. So this is upstream of COX-2, right? So this is why this is so important. You're getting the inflammation earlier. And some other herbs that have been shown to have an effect on HMGB1 are licorice, rhodiola. Could rhodiola get any better, I have to say? rhodiola. So epimedium, which is an excellent herb for bone health as well. Green tea. So make sure you're drinking really good quality green tea or taking a green tea supplement. And we're going to find out more. So there are other herbs, but I won't list them all off. But essentially, there are many herbs now that we're understanding inhibit this HMGB1. So it's really excellent for us to know about this and to keep an eye on the research, because we've got tools in our botanical dispensary to help with this. So they're the key inflammatory pain modulator herbs that I tend to use. And we can now talk about analgesics, if you like.
Often we think of those analgesics specifically, like willow bark sometimes, but what else would you think about too?
Yeah, you're right. Willow bark, and particularly the high salicin extract of willow bark, is a great analgesic. And I want to mention, to get the really good benefits from salicin and the willow bark extract, try a higher dose to begin with in that sort of loading phase, as I like to call it, because that's what dynamically changed my approach in using willow bark and seeing significant results. Okay. So make sure you're
thinking titrate high and then go down.
Yeah. So I normally start at a higher dose for at least 2 weeks, reassess the patient, and maybe even go to 4 weeks, and then go down to, sort of maybe 30% less of a dose, and then continue on that. So with everything with pain, I normally give patients sort of like an upper limit of each of the supplements I'm providing to them. And I say, for example, take 2 tablets at a time, and your upper limit in a day of this particular one is 6 or 8, whatever it might be, for this period. And then we reassess. But if you don't need to take 6 and you only need 4, and that manages your pain, you have control over that. And it really gives them that power to decide for themselves what they need. And that works really, really well. And then they, are really delighted when they come back to me and they say, I actually didn't need that many, Amanda, So it helps them feel that they have control over this pain, which sometimes with pain, we feel so out of control. It really debilitates us. So the other analgesic herbs I love to use, and these are my three absolute go-to favorites, and I like to combine them all together: California poppy, Corydalis, or in TCM, it's Yang Huso, and Jamaican dogwood. So those three together are, I often use this expression, the bee's knees. They are the best herbs for that analgesic relief. And all of them have been used for, if not hundreds of years, thousands of years. They all provide that analgesic and spasmolytic effect, so relaxing of smooth muscle. But they're also very good for sleep health, which we talked about on the other sleep podcast. So if you're having pain at night, you can take them to help you sleep and to relieve your pain, but they also can be taken during the day, but will not make you sleepy. Okay, so that's really key to know. So they are good for any type of pain. So the research has shown that those three herbs combined together can really help with any type of nerve-related pain, so neuralgia, headaches, sciatica, shingles, etc. And I would also add into that anything with neuralgia, you need to put in St. John's wort. It's like the herb that's very specific for nerve pain. Using these herbs for any type of musculoskeletal or arthritic pain, muscle cramping, so dysmenorrhea, headaches, migraines, toothache. And if you've got any nerve pain with toothaches, add some St. John's wort in together with that as well. And it's worth mentioning that Corydalis or Yang Huso has been used for thousands of years in TCM for pain and inflammation and for any sort of contusion injuries. So thinking here about patients that may have maybe fallen off their bicycle, or if they've had surgery and they, for example, I use it a lot with patients with liposuction surgery because there's a lot of bruising and pain post-surgical. So any type of pain, you can use those three herbs together. And once again, if it's acute pain, dose higher. If it's chronic pain, you may need to do that loading dose and then titrate the dose down when you've got some pain relief. And once again, empower the patient to make their own decision on upper end of dose.
So when we also think about pain, and you talked about a variety of different areas, but what about kind of that smooth muscle, or, you talked a little bit about cramping or other kind of muscle pain. What would you utilize then?
Right. So we need a bunch of spasmolytic herbs, and the key ones, we talked about Corydalis in the previous section for analgesic. So that one always I use, but I combine that then with cramp bark, which is a great spasmolytic, but it's also a uterine tonic. Wild yam. Now, there's lots of myths about wild yam, so maybe we can discuss that in another podcast if there's any interest in that. But it is an excellent spasmolytic. It's estrogen modulating and anti-inflammatory. It's very, very effective as a herbal extract, not as a cream that you put on topically. That doesn't work as well. And also I combine with raspberry leaf and ginger. Ginger is an excellent anti-inflammatory, and it's in many formulations I use for a pain, but it's a peripheral circulatory stimulant as well. So where you want to get blood flow happening, that's where it comes into its own with the anti-inflammatory action also. So if we combine these herbs together, you have great relief for conditions such as dysmenorrhea, which can be so debilitating for many women. I know that I used to have really bad dysmenorrhea before I discovered herbal medicine myself. Amenorrhea, and particularly that blood stasis, You can use them for headaches, if through muscle tension, ovarian pain, uterine pain, and also any type of cramping, for example, in stomach cramping, IBS, IBD, diverticulitis, prostate pain, leg cramping, etc. So those herbs together in a formulation work well to address those various types of spasms. And once again, often spasms are acute, so dose higher and only use them as you need it. So you don't need to take them all the time. Say, for example, for dysmenorrhea, you don't need to take them all months. Ideally, just take them a couple of days before menses onset, and hopefully everyone's tracking their cycle with an app. So 2 days before menses onset, start these herbs and then use them for the couple of days that there's the severe dysmenorrhea, and dose higher as needed.
You know, one question about the wild yam, and we should talk about it more sometime, but you know, you mentioned headaches and other things. Would you use wild yam in men and women, or mostly in women?
I use it in both men and women. Mm-hmm. Yes. And even though it says, I said it was estrogen modulating, mm-hmm. it's not going to have an estrogenic effect in men, you know, so
right.
We're not going to have any hormonal issues in that regard. Yeah. So typically herbs aren't one sex.
Right.
So we can use wild yam in men for sure.
I think a lot of people don't do that. And so I think that's a good point to emphasize, okay. Right?
Right. Okay. That's good. Thank you for addressing that.
Yeah. So what other supportive, you know, botanicals would you think about as you're approaching kind of pain as a whole?
So some other things that we might consider are particularly edema, because that can be a real issue. I talked about celery seed being really good for edema, and where we might need extra support, or where we might not be, say, using the celery seed boswellia, for example, we might need some other specific support. We can use the combinations of horse chestnut, butcher's broom, and ginkgo. Now, horse chestnut and butcher's broom are anti-inflammatory, anti-edema, and venotonic. So if we add in the ginkgo, we have an amazing circulatory stimulant and tissue perfusion enhancing. So where we're going here is we're thinking about, you know, edema of any kind. So edema and ascites, lymphedema, any disorders where local tissue edema might be involved, such as trigeminal neuralgia, carpal tunnel syndrome, RSI. Also, I mentioned when I was talking about the willow bark extract of with the high salicin, about those spinal disc issues, so the way you've got compression and related inflammation. And I said that I really loved the willow bark for that. I always use it with these herbs, horse chestnut, butcher's broom, and ginkgo, because we've got to get that spinal disc compression and inflammation reduced and allow for the healing. So that is a really great combination for that. Also thinking about varicose veins, which can be very painful. So these herbs have been shown to improve venous tone. And in particular, they are really good at moving the flow through to the deeper veins and decreasing the flow parameters in superficial veins. So you're going to get reduction in pain. You're also, they've been shown to decrease venous diameter size. So this, you know, the diameter of the vein, to improve the integrity of the vein. And in studies, they've been shown, particularly horse chestnut, has been shown to be so effective in reducing edema, it was as effective as compression stockings. This is remarkable. And in a Cochrane review of 17 studies, so, you know, highest level of review you can have from the Cochrane board, showed that it was effective in reducing chronic venous insufficiency. It was very effective in reducing that edema, pain, itchiness, and feeling of limb fatigue. So thinking here, for example, about patients not only with varicose veins, but if you've got a patient who might be bedridden, in a wheelchair, highly sedentary, for example, maybe they're very overweight, or maybe have, you know, restriction in due to their health issues in being able to move very much, you need to be thinking about these herbs because they are effective in reducing that lower limb heaviness that you often get, helping to improve venous tone and venous integrity, so improving that blood flow, and to reduce the edema that's often associated. So very, very effective in many patients in that regard.
We've talked a lot about a variety of different herbs and how they kind of, you know, work in conjunction. So how would you get somebody started? What would be those clinical pearls that you would say, okay, you know, I'm thinking about this patient, they have pain, but how do I approach it with all of those three areas and analgesic, muscle spasms, other supportive, you know, inflammation? How do I get started with that from a clinical aspect?
I think the first place to start is touching back on to what we discussed earlier in terms of considering the whole person, because pain's just not in one spot. There are other issues. So thinking about neuroinflammation, think about the nervous system, because often when someone's in pain, they may be very low in their mood. They may be very anxious about the issues, you know, affecting their job, whether or not they can work, for example, looking after their family. It can affect relationships very deeply, particularly if it's chronic pain. And also think about, for example, if someone's got chronic pain, often they're not moving as much, so maybe they might have higher blood sugar issues, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome. So you've got to consider the whole patient. And the author Simon Sinek uses the term, which I love, extreme listening. So as a clinician, we have to perfect this art of extreme listening, which is listening deeply to truly understand, not just to respond. So you don't need to have all the answers straight away, but you need to really listen to understand, to put all the jigsaw pieces together. And this is particularly critical in a consult with someone who's got pain, and particularly chronic pain. So taking a really super comprehensive case history. And also if the patient doesn't indicate that they've got pain on their intake form or in the first consult, make sure you ask those questions, because often people with chronic pain normalize it and they normalize the debility that it's caused for them. You know, they've accepted the fact that they can't exercise as much or they can't do this and that. And then once you've got a really good case, you decide obviously on your priorities, but choosing the right botanicals and whole food nutrition. Don't forget your whole food nutrition, such as magnesium, glucosamine, chondroitin, for example. You've got to look at the whole picture. And then you need to decide on your core botanicals and whole food nutrition, and then what else you need as adjunct support. So you might do a phased approach over time. Now, if it's acute pain, obviously you're going to do something short term, but higher doses, and keep assessing the patient in the next few days. And my way of doing that is getting them to text me. So if I need to, I can call them straight away and address something. And chronic pain, I think, is like a slow poison, draining the person of all joy and ability to live. And what we know is that you need to address the mental health stuff. And interestingly, in a recent study in JAMA, I think it was published on the 3rd of May, assessed patients who had chronic pain with they were using opioids and had become, very tolerant and using high doses, etc. And they found that meditation and sort of CBT work, and I love visualization particularly, helped to reduce the level of their chronic pain. It didn't ameliorate it completely, but they're only were using, sort of cognitive psychotherapy, and reduced the amount of doses of opioids that they needed to use. And another study in the Australian Journal of Medicine in February looked at opioid use in OA, so it's a systematic review and meta-analysis. And they said that with opioids, it provided little pain relief benefit for patients with OA. So we need to come up with a whole raft of solutions, okay? It's not just one drug or one herb or one nutrient that helps. You've got to address the whole patient. And I think doing the biopsychosocial model of pain can be really beneficial. So I always get patients to keep a pain diary, make sure that they're doing their meditation and visualization. If need be, they need to see a counselor or a therapist of some kind if it's, really affecting them deeply, because that can really help. But even just using an app to do meditation every day, I do get them doing daily stretching and exercising within their comfort realms. So you cannot just not do anything. No matter how bad the pain, you still need to move in some way, okay? So that might be just very basic Tai Chi. It might be chair yoga, whatever it might be for that individual. Get them moving, because it helps with your mental health as well as your, your physical health. And just keep reassessing the patient, even for acute pain, keep reassessing them. Don't just sort of send them on their way for the next week and, hope that they get better sort of thing. I've given them the right things. They now need to get better. I like to address it, because if we can get someone really relieved of their pain so that they can live a full life again, which is very possible. I always say to my patients, no one's written off, you're not going to be like this for the rest of your life. We can do something to help you. So keep reassessing, keep being actively involved, and make sure the patient is actively involved as well. Don't let them give up, because if they feel defeated, nothing will change. So they would probably be my main clinical tips.
As we think about this combination of everything that we've talked about, I mean, there's so much that we can do to address. And like you said, you really have to do that investigation, figure it out, understand, who that patient is and what their needs are. So what are kind of your last comments around pain and how we can support those individuals? And, as you talked about, it's a really multifactorial approach, right?
So my closing remarks would probably be, it's a jigsaw puzzle. We've got to put the pieces together, and sometimes that can take a bit of time. So it might not happen all in the first consult, but you are working to solve the whole picture for that person. And believe, as a clinician, you can really help people. I've had people that, in their 30s with rheumatoid arthritis in a wheelchair, And one patient is sort of my amazing patient. She was in a wheelchair in her 30s with RA, and, you know, within a year to 2 years of working together, we had her fully mobile again, back swimming and being fully active, doing push-ups and goodness knows what else every morning. She's full of good health. So you can do it. I always get people to be inspired by stories I share with them. And also I inspire people. There's an amazing woman on YouTube who's 72 years old and she crushes CrossFit. So I always send that video link to my patients who are suffering from pain. Work as a clinician, you must work with a variety of other clinicians to provide that holistic approach for your patient. So whether it's a therapist, a chiropractor, acupuncturist, whatever, you know, make sure you are really driving the strategy for that patient, not just doing your tiny part of it. And I would say also that as a sufferer of chronic pain, which I used to be, don't feel all hope is lost. See a good clinician. And if you're a clinician suffering chronic pain, see someone else, get an objective point of view, get some help, and be open-minded, work in that really holistic way. And I would say, you know, mindset is key. They've shown in the research that if you focus on your mindset and your, you know, mental well-being, you can minimize the perception of pain. So that alone is helpful. So you can do it is probably my final remark on this.
That's amazing. Well, we will all visualize being somewhere where we're, you know, running and we're going to move a bit and we're going to think about how we can address pain for our patients in an effective way. So thank you so much, Amanda, for this great discussion, and we'll look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Medicinal Herbs Podcast. To learn more about the botanicals mentioned in this episode, and to read more about the research Amanda describes, go to holisticmatters.com. That's holistic with a W.